Hi, this is Wesley Uhr. I played Will Marshall on Land of the Lost. Run, Holly, run! There's a sleaze jack! And you're listening to the Pop Culture Preservation Society.
Everyone, to an encore presentation of episode 105 entitled Getting Lost in the Land of the Lost with Wesley Uhr, which is a really fun and energetic, for sure, conversation with Wesley Uhr, who played Will on Land of the Lost, as well as Michael Horton on Days of Our Lives, at the same time, by the way, playing those two characters at the same time, and also is the co-creator of one of our own kids' favorite shows, Dragon Tales.
I love that fact.
Isn't that crazy? I had no idea.
And we'll talk about that in this episode, how it's so fun that he was a favorite of ours, but then he had a hand in a show that was a favorite of our own kids', which is so great. We're encoring this episode because, like many other of our favorite shows, Land of the Lost premiered in 1974, which means it turned 50 this year. But besides the fact that Land of the Lost turned 50 in September, we just wanted you all to hear this conversation either for the first time or again, because it was so much fun, wasn't it?
It was. It was super fun.
Yeah, we really clicked with Wesley, which I think comes across really well in this episode. And then a couple months after this interview, we got to meet Wesley in person at the Teen Idol dinner we emceed in Los Angeles. And we're very happy to report that the energy and just great vibe you'll hear in a minute, honestly, is even bigger in person. Wasn't it?
Yes, it's true. It's so funny. And I didn't, it's one of those things where it's very trippy being in the same space with him, because when you watched Land of the Lost, it didn't occur to you that these were actors, that these were like, it's Will? Like, Will is still with us. He's not in the Land of the Lost with the sleestacks right now at this moment.
He made it.
It's just, right, he made it out of the Land of the Lost. It's so weird.
And remember at that Teen Idol dinner, to the point that you're making, Kristen, about these people that when we were kids, we thought they were their characters. When Holly, a.k.a. Kathy Coleman, which is her real name,
because she's a real person.
Yeah, she is a real person. And when she came into view, Kristen started crying.
I started to cry.
I think that was maybe one of your biggest Manilow moments. She was literally both of those Kristens at one time. Maybe even more so the child Kristen.
Yeah.
But, oh my goodness, just watching that, again, one of the gifts of this podcast is seeing you guys just have these experiences. And I chuckled a little bit because it's like, why are you crying? I mean, like, there's Christy McNichol. There's James Vincent McNichol. But and no offense to Kathy. She's great. And Holly was great. But yeah,
and
the tears.
I'm crying. I blame it on science. I really do. Because, you know, we talk about getting Manilowed, which is the definition of being Manilowed is that you are your child self and your adult self at the same time. I think that is an actual thing. We talk about it sort of facetiously, but I think that literally happened. Like, the seven-year-old in me just came, like, coming out of my eyeballs. And it didn't help that she looks exactly the same. Like, she has all of this long, straight blonde hair with the blunt bangs. I'm like, holy shit, it's Holly.
I know. She was just missing the plaid shirt.
Yes, she needed the plaid shirt. It was exactly the same. I swear to God, it's just science. It's not even emotions. It's not even feelings. It was just science.
Yeah.
Do you remember when the two of them got up at the beginning of that dinner and sang the theme song?
Yes.
How fun that was. And you guys listening, stay tuned. If you haven't heard this episode before, but even if you have, listen again, because Wesley is going to sing the Land of the Lost theme song in this episode, and it blew our minds because we didn't know it was
so
coming.
Funny.
And we even have video. You know what? This week I'm going to put that video clip in the Weekly Reader, because watching our reactions when he starts singing is priceless, because we were like giddy. We were so excited. So to celebrate 50 years of the Marshall family and that Yellow Raft and Chaka and the Sleestacks and Grumpy and Big Alice, I have a couple of fun facts related to the show that you two might not know. So this is some information that has come out just kind of in honor of Land of the Lost turning 50 in September. So we all know Sid and Marty Krofft are the evil geniuses behind Land of the Lost. But did you know that the Krofts once created an adult puppet show?
Oh, I have vague memories of this.
Have we talked about it?
Okay, no, also, we've never talked about it.
I was just about to say, if right now listeners are going, yeah, you guys have talked about it, just please forgive us. We've got menopause brain. And it's been, right? it's been 200 yeah. episodes, I think, just about.
And we do forget all of the things. Like the
As soon as we stop recording,
yeah, we forget everything.
Pretty soon, we're just going to start topics again with episode one, you guys. Right. And we'll be like, oh, we've never done an episode on Judy Blooms Forever.
So we're going to interview Sean Cassidy.
Yeah. What? Oh, I'm so excited. Are you guys kidding? When?
Red flag listeners. If when and we do that, I'm not even saying if, when, send us some DMs and just kindly say, right. Guys, mm-hmm. I think you might need to whatever, go visit the doctor.
It's time to stop.
Something.
That's right. However, we're kind of preaching to the choir here because our listeners are our age mates. So they probably be like, oh, they're going to interview Sean Cassidy?
Yes.
Right. I can't wait.
They don't remember either.
This is so exciting. Okay.
Okay. But I remember, I have vague memories of this not being for me and it being short-lived. That's what I
remember. Okay. Well, yes. Yeah. So before HR Puff and Stuff and Sigmund and the Sea Monsters, Sid and Marty Krofft got their start as puppeteers in a very adult corner of the vaudeville world. And this information comes from a Remind magazine article celebrating Land of the Lost's 50th. And they tell us that, yes, indeed, Sid Krofft spent his late teens and early 20s touring the world as a puppeteer, first as part of the Ringling Brothers Circus sideshow.
Oh,
not just the
that.
Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey's Circus. Let's go all the way back to when it was just the Ringling Brothers Circus sideshow.
Sideshow.
Like, just
with
that
Lobster
word
Boy.
Sideshow. The word sideshow yes. tells us how long ago this was,
right.
I think.
Well, when you said vaudeville, I thought, there were puppets during the vaudeville era? Like, my mind is kind of blown.
Yeah, who knew? Well, and eventually then, he performed as an opening act for performers like Judy Garland and Sid Charisse. In the late 50s, Sid then recruited his younger brother Marty into the act, and they created an adult puppet show modeled on French burlesque shows like The Follies.
Oh.
Wait, just gets better.
Oh,
the action of the show included bare-breasted beauties who hang in bird cages over the audience or parade around the stage, puppets parading around the stage.
Puppet boo, bare-breasted puppets.
Wait. So my favorite part. They're parading around the stage, heaving, wiggling, sighing, shaking, and saucing the house.
What is saucing?
I don't want to know, Kristen. I don't want to know. Please don't ask questions like that. I don't want to know.
But wait, hold on. I've got questions. Did you yes. see any pictures? Like, is this like
yes,
the puppets?
Okay, yes.
good.
Because yes, yes. Stay
like,
tuned.
You saw
yes.
the puppet boobs?
Yes. Yes. And everybody else is going to get too soon. So this show, anyway, this show, it was a major hit. It went from sellout shows in the San Fernando Valley to the New York World's Fair in 1964. This bare-breasted puppet burlesque show.
I've got to ask my mom.
Ask your mom.
Yes, I will.
Then it was a touring production that played for the rest of the 60s. And the success of that burlesque bare-breasted puppet show got them on the Dean Martin show. And that's what helped their TV career finally take off.
Oh, and then we get HR Puff and Stuff. Oh
yes. Now,
God.
I'm quoting from the Remind article there, which I'll include in this week's Weekly Reader, because you need to click on the link because you will see a photo of the bare-breasted puppets. And you guys, they're actually very beautiful. They're quite beautiful.
Really? Because I'm picturing nips and tucks.
No,
like, you know.
Yes, no, the breasts are very beautiful. And here's what I was scared of. What a puppet. But it just looks like a very beautiful, like, human face. It doesn't look like a puppet face. Like, I don't think like Lady Elaine from Mr. Rogers.
That is.
Right,
I can't get that out of my head.
Well, I thought of what's
don't
her face?
Think of Witchy Poo with bare
Madam.
Breasts.
Madam, I was thinking of Madam. Like, this is Madam that's aged. She once was the puppet with that was bare breast, and then she got old.
Yes, got it. Okay, and then she becomes Madam in the early 80s. Got it. Okay.
But I've got to ask, and maybe this is just, listeners, you need to just go to the Remind article. But when you said they were, like, above the stage or above the audience or whatever, like, so we're not talking somebody with their hand up a skirt, like the –
How no, it's the type of puppets. It's it's
like
really like the Jim Henson
Finding
puppets.
Nemo or whatever.
Yeah, it's
in
like
those.
It's really like the Henson puppets where the hand is attached to almost like a stick that they're doing and stuff. Yeah. And we're hoping, listeners, we're hoping, and fingers crossed, because there are signs that this might happen, that we'll have Sid Croft on the podcast soon. He's in his 90s. And if so,
we'll
definitely need to ask him about this, because this is history, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the other fun fact that I learned from this Remind article was that the plots of Land of the Lost were actually based on sci-fi novel covers. So writer David Gerald, who if I remember correctly, which like rewind a few minutes and you'll realize I don't remember correctly, but I think Wesley might mention him in this episode, but okay. He wrote for all three seasons of Land of the Lost. He says that one of the other writers and Sid Croft had put together just a book of pictures they cut out from the covers of various science fiction magazines. Things like a waterfall, a jungle, a giant bee, dinosaurs, monkey people. And they asked him if he could make it work as a TV series. The Crofts already had the title, but that was pretty much it. And so David Gerald says he scratched his head and he figured, yeah, I could probably do something with that. So really all these storylines just kind of came from covers.
I love that it's just the covers. Like, yes. I thought when you said science fiction novel, I thought you were going to say like the storyline or no, just the cover.
Yeah, just waterfall. It might have just been a monkey person or a waterfall. Mm-hmm. And so he took that. So that's kind of genius, I think.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, all right. We hope that was a good appetizer for all of you and you're ready to hear about our own memories of this crazy, amazing show and hear some great stories from Will Marshall himself, Wesley Uhr.
And every celebrity you can imagine would come visit our set, from Elton John to Charo to Stallone to there was one point when Charo was chasing Chaka around the jungle going coochie 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 coo.
Hello world is a song that we're singing, come on get happy, a whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing, we'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who will never, ever forget Jenny's phone number. 8675309.
Oh, sorry. We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we are saving the show that swept us down a waterfall in a yellow raft, through a portal into the past every Saturday morning, and made us all, to this day, bond over our fear of that thing called a sleestack. Land of the Lost. I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
We are so excited about today's show, everyone. This one has been on our minds since day one of this podcast, because as many of you longtime listeners know, we include a Land of the Lost reference in the intro we've used since episode one. And we've said like over 100 times now, which really, really illustrates what the PCPS is all about.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
Land of the Lost was another Sid and Marty Croft crazy carnival ride of a show, joining the ranks in the early 70s of shows like The Bugaloos, Sigmund and the Sea Monsters, H.R. Puff and Stuff. And it detailed the adventures of the Marshall family, Father Rick and his children, Will and Holly, who are trapped in an alternate universe or time warp inhabited by dinosaurs, primate type people called Pakuni, and aggressive humanoid lizard creatures called Sleestacks.
Oh, I hate that word humanoid. Oh,
I hate the word Sleestacks. It
I do
puts
too.
A fear in me.
Okay, so number one, my roommate in college would not watch Land of the Lost because she was so afraid of the Sleestak. She mm-hmm. couldn't believe that I actually watched the show because it was so scary. And oh, this wow. is kind of a universal thing, you guys. I have a copy of Dynamite magazine with Sleestaks on the cover, and I just casually had it laid out on my coffee table this week because I'm doing research, right? My husband walks in, he sees the Sleestaks on our coffee table, and he points at it and goes, ah! Like he was terrified. He's 54.
It's an instinctive reaction when we see mm-hmm. a Sleestak.
Right. Yep.
I think.
For sure. Well, can I just ask you, did they interview the Sleestaks in that Dynamite magazine? What's the...
No, they interview Sid and Marty Croft.
Oh, okay.
But that's a legit question, right?
Like but back in the day, we yeah. might have thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. yeah.
Although, did they ever say words?
No, they just made that awful sound, didn't they?
I thought one of them kind of talked.
Oh, there is one who knows English, and he's like their spokesperson.
Their leader.
Isn't he, like, good?
He might be non-evil. Yeah.
Yeah. Like uh-huh. the, yeah, like you said, the interpreter, the one that goes back and forth.
The
so
liaison.
He's neutral.
Yeah.
We all watched it. We all loved it. It is a huge part of our Saturday morning memories. For me, I was, you guys, just 5 years old when this show debuted in September of 1974. And I was kind of held hostage to watch it because it was definitely not a show 5-year-old Michelle would have chosen to watch. That was over my head. But my sister, who at the time was 9, she was all about Land of the Lost. You know, you have one TV channel on a Saturday morning. So at that time slot, Land of the Lost was on every Saturday morning. So I had a choice. I either could watch Land of the Lost, kind of probably behind my hands in my blanket, or I cannot watch TV. And as a 5-year-old child in the early 70s, that's not an option to not watch TV on Saturday mornings. I have a very love-hate memory of Land of the Lost. I love it because of the nostalgia, but I hate it because I can remember how scared I would be watching it. But I also loved the characters on this show. No matter how scared I was about with the dinosaurs and the Sleestaks, I loved the brother and I loved Will. I loved Holly. I wanted to be Holly. Like, as you guys know, I always wanted to be like the little sister or whatever. Loved her braids. I thought she was the cutest. And so
I loved her teeth.
Yes. Oh, they're beautiful.
Is that weird?
No.
I loved her teeth.
She has beautiful mm-hmm. teeth.
I wish I could have teeth like that.
I just feel like, for me, my memory is fear, tension.
Yeah.
But also mm-hmm. just this feeling of how much I loved the family aspect of this show. What about you guys?
Well, I want to follow up because I was the big sister in your scenario. And I have, as you were just talking, these little memories are popping in my head of my sister being afraid. Mm-hmm. And I was like, basically, tough shit, you know, grow up. We're watching it. Yeah. And like, she was really scared and I didn't care. I'm going to have to talk to her a little bit about this, but it was just like, this is what we're watching. And you're
family therapy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think I did that a lot to her now.
You know what, though, Carolyn, on March 12th, when we go to this Teen Idol event and your sister's there as well, Ronnie and I can bond over that, right? We can bond over, Ronnie, if you're listening right now, we're going to bond over all the little sister things our mean older sisters made us do. And then we're going to, you and I together, go up and we're going to talk to Wesley and get our picture with Wesley.
Get a little closure. Maybe, Carolyn, you should invite your therapist. And then you should have some family therapy at the event with the characters from Land of the Lost.
Yeah.
And we'll all get closure.
But I really loved that show, I think, because of the drama. I think it was almost like a little soap opera for me. Each mm-hmm. week, I was coming back to think, this is the week that they're going to get out. Is this the week? Because that's all I wanted for them. And it kept me engrossed in it. And mm-hmm. that's kind of like the that storyline and that drama part of it. Yeah, it was not like H.R. Puff and stuff or a Sigmund. This was like highbrow for me.
This was your Knot's Landing.
Exactly.
Your dad.
Exactly.
right.
On Saturday morning.
And it was very real, wasn't it? Like, we can watch it now and think that's so campy. But you guys, when anytime they were inside their cave, you can picture this, right? Because this happens in every episode. They're inside the cave and here comes Grumpy, the giant T-Rex, and his face is right on the outside of the cave. And it's from their point of view. It just releases so much fear in my body that those
scenes. It's shockingly terrifying. We played Land of the Lost in my neighborhood constantly. There was a lot of running. And we would fight over who was going to be who. And it's very interesting. I always wanted to be Holly. My friend Ann Chase always wanted to be Will. But she's the one who had a crush on Will. But her fantasy is not being a love interest of Will. She wants to be Will. And so this is a question I want to ask Dr. Forster, who is our professional, our pro crushologist from Chapman University, from our episode called, I can't remember, Crushology 101. Like, is that a thing where you kind of want to be your crush?
We kind of felt that way about Christy McNichol. We wanted to be Christy.
Yeah, we wanted to be Christy McNichol. That's true. My friend's dad, this same friend, Aunt Chase, her dad was a geologist. And this is the Land of the Lost is how I pictured his job. I thought he went to work in the Land of the Lost, basically.
I can see that. And I can see also that you being maybe afraid that that would happen to Ann Chase and her family. Like, oh no, don't ever go river rafting.
Go to the Yucatan.
Don't ever go.
Yes,
don't ever
go rafting.
Yeah, don't do it, Ann.
Don't do it.
Do you know what Brian said when we were just recently rewatching the pilot episode and talking about Land of the Lost a lot the past couple of days, because I've been prepping for this episode. He had a really good point. He said, it was our Jurassic Park. It's the people always running from the dinosaurs. And it's the fear of, yes. You know, do you guys remember the first time you saw Jurassic Park in the theater? I do. It was sort of a delicious, terrifying, right? That's what Land of the Lost gave us in 1974. It was just the 1974, yeah. 75, 76 version of Jurassic Park.
So we all watched the pilot episode last night and we all knew that we loved Land of the Lost, but I think you guys will concur that when I turned it on last night, watching it for the first time since like 1976, I remembered how much I actually loved it, like how invested mm-hmm. I was in the show. And it's really grown in the people who love it. They have more fans now probably than they did in 1976. It's a true cult classic. And part of what I think people love about it is that it has these old school retro, quote unquote, special effects that are so entertaining in their rudimentary nature. Right? It's almost what makes it fun. In this era of CGI and all this crazy technological animation, this is actually what makes it more fun for us right now. And so I watched this last night with my 20-year-old, and he is like, what is this that I'm watching? Like, did somebody make this in their bathtub? He said that where they go over the waterfall, he goes, it looks like somebody put a garden hose over some rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that's entertaining. That is so entertaining. And you know what's so funny is that we didn't even worry about that the whole timeline and the explanation of how they tumbled back into time, because there is one sentence. There's a one sentence explainer of what has happened when they went over the waterfall. They're like, hey, Dad, how did we end up in this strange place? And Rick Marshall is like, well, last night, kids, I saw three moons and then we went back in time. And that's all you get. And they're that's like, it. Well, okay.
Yeah,
and there's a dinosaur. Everybody run.
I also think, you know, we talk a lot about how scary this show was with the Sleestaks and the dinosaurs and just the whole, especially when you're watching it when you're 5 and 6 years old, at getting lost in a place like this and being away. But
yeah,
some of the writing, I think, was done very purposefully to kind of alleviate that fear. Because, for instance, when they're like, how did we get here, Dad? And he's like, well, last night I saw three moons and we're in this new place. And then instead of Holly doing something very realistic that a, you know, 8-year-old child would do, which would be freaking the F out, right? She just goes, aw, I wish we were home. And then things like where they ram the big fly swatter, you know, it's what they call the big log. They ram into the T-Rex's throat. And after they do it and he's going, wah, outside of the cave, and you're filled with fear for them in this moment. Their reaction is just like, good. They almost like high five each other. Like, good job. We showed him. And they now as adults though, like we look at it like, I think they should be a lot more scared and terrified, but probably it was done very purposefully to not, because had they written it that way, you guys, it would have been way too scary for the five and 6 year olds to watch.
Yeah, we were already so scared.
Yeah, so they had to make light of it somehow.
So now that I'm thinking about it, I think it was intentional. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what it is? It's very much like Rocky Horror. The way people love Rocky Horror oftentimes is for the camp. And we enjoy the story of Rocky Horror. And I feel very much the same way about Land of the Lost. There is something important there that keeps us coming back. We're not laughing at it. We're laughing with it.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Oh, no matter how campy we think it is today, we respect it because of the nostalgia and the importance it plays in our childhoods.
When I look all around, I can't believe the things I found. Now I need to find my way. I'm lost. Find me living in the land of the lost.
So obviously we could talk about Land of the Lost and our feelings about the show for hours and hours and hours. But hey, listeners, wouldn't it be super fun if you could hear from an actual source? Wouldn't you love to hear from somebody who was on the actual Land of the Lost?
Yes.
How about Will? Would you like to hear from Will? Well, we had the great pleasure and privilege of talking to Wesley Ewer, the man who played Will Marshall on Land of the Lost.
It was so fun. Such a delight to talk to him and learn a lot of behind the scenes kind of stuff about the show.
And good dish.
He did.
You guys, our minds were exploding constantly during this conversation, and we know yours will be too.
Please enjoy our conversation with Wesley Ewer, star of Land of the Lost.
Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition met the great
excited to welcome this icon of Saturday morning TV, the man who tumbled over a waterfall and landed in another dimension, all for the viewing pleasure of millions of children who grew up in the 70s. Wesley Ewer, also known as Will from Land of the Lost, is our guest today because he understands the impact that this long ago children's show had on us. It's an impact that shows up in the standardized opening of every single one of our podcasts. Wesley, thank you for being here today, and thank you for making it over that waterfall.
There he is. Thank you.
And wait, you just clicked on.
And we see you. We see you.
Yes, we can see you.
What perfect timing.
And you're moving.
Yay. Hey, guys. Oh, my God. Thank you for having me on. It's great.
Did I say your name correctly?
Yeah, you did.
Awesome.
It's like Europe without the oop.
Oh, duh. Yeah.
Great.
That works.
Or Eureka without the k.
Yeah.
And we are loving, Wesley, just his video just clicked in. He's all the way in Mexico right now. But I just want to describe to you that he's sitting here in a Sleestack t-shirt. Of course he is, right? We would expect no less. And, I asked him earlier, but I want him to repeat this, listeners, so you get to hear. I said, Wesley, how many Sleestack t-shirts do you own?
I have tons of them. I've got closets filled with them. I have 4,875. Well, 74. One of them got destroyed in the dryer. But no.
Oh, no.
You know what's amazing is the merchandising. This show, you know, is going to celebrate its 50th anniversary in next year. And 50 years later, I can't believe it has this huge following, and it continues to grow. And all the sort of official and unofficial merchandising that comes out, you can buy, you know, on Amazon or wherever. And every once in a while, I'll go on like a Redbubble or one of those t-shirt places, and there's another image. And it's so odd to buy a shirt with my image on it of me, and I'll pay for
You're
it.
Right.
And
it's just, <You're right.
laughs> so and you know what? I love it. I love it. So it keeps the show alive.
You're embracing it totally.
Yeah.
It does, yeah.
And it keeps it alive for us, too. I mean, there's a reason we're all still talking about it 50 years later. And we were just talking about this. Like, in this era of CGI animation and technology and all these, I don't even know the technical word to say, like, special effects, that this such a rudimentary show is having such an awakening, having such a growth period. It's so funny. What is it about it, do you think, that keeps Phil coming back?
It's the story. It's what we had on Land of the Lost was we had the Star Trek writers writing our show. And David Gerald, who wrote, if you're a Star Trek fan, Trouble with Tribbles was one of his episodes. And he was our head writer, and he got all the Star Trek had just finished its first, you know, its first 3 years. And he got Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov, to create Enoch, the talking sleestak. He had DC Fontana, Larry Niven, Spinrad, all these amazing sci-fi writers who wrote these amazing scripts. And so the you're right that there's no CGA, and the effects are kind of hokey, you know, for the 70s. I mean, of course, at the time they were state of the art. It was amazing. Sure. But it's the story. I mean, as Shakespeare said, the story is the thing. And, you know, we're talking time doorways. And David said at a panel recently, David Gerald, he said, I told my writers, we're not writing a Saturday morning show. We're writing a sci-fi show that airs on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. So they never talked down to the audience. I mean, there were matrices and doppelgangers and antecedents and all sorts of stuff. And they never like said, okay, kids, here's what this means. They just said it and the kids had to like learn it.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
It was like out of my realm of understanding, but I was there 100%. Like, I didn't need to be able to understand everything so specifically. I was like, I'm gonna get it. I'm gonna get it. I'm gonna get it. And it just, like you said, it wasn't talking down to the kids. It felt like I was watching something very sophisticated. You just kind of blew my mind with the Star Trek thing, because Star Trek is the same way, where it has these really diehard fans, and it always has. And it also has a similar feel to it. I would never have put those two together, but you're right. That's a total match.
I was just going to say, one of the appeals to what you were just saying is how they never talked down to the audience, but there was something for everyone.
People ask about the Will Ferrell movie and what they did with Land of the Lost. Of course, it became a comedy, and what was missing, and one of the reasons it faltered, was because Land of the Lost was, it was about a family without, we'd lost our mom. This was a Saturday morning show that was talking about real issues, and we were trapped in this world trying to survive. And we have more fans that come up at, we do the autograph shows and things like that. Kathy, who played my sister Holly, she's really my sister in life now. I mean, we are best friends. She just moved to Palm Springs to be next to us, and she's coming to Mexico to stay at my house for a couple of weeks in a few weeks. But we have people come up to us, our table, and are like crying. One guy came up and he said, listen, I got to tell you something. I know it's going to sound silly what he said. And he was in his 50s, and he said, when I was a kid, and when Land of the Lost changed from the second season to the third season, we lost our dad and our uncle came in.
Right.
And he said, my family was getting a divorce and my dad was leaving us. And he said, I was a mess and I didn't know what to do. But I saw in Land of the Lost that the family could survive even though the dad left. He says, it gave me the strength to get through that time of my life. And he's hugging us and crying. He said, thank you guys so much. Because as a performance, we never know the ripple effect of things we do.
No,
you know, we read a script, right? We do it, and we move on. But there is an effect, especially when scripts are written so beautifully, like David Gerald and all these guys that wrote these scripts.
Well, and that, you just answered a really important question. We were so excited for the Land of the Lost movie, but it was something else entirely. Mm-hmm. It was apples and oranges. And so you could have really lost those Star Trek people. And I don't want to label them Star Trek people, but the people who were really there for that intricate story was not there.
No.
It's not that it wasn't a movie. It was apples and oranges.
Sid Croft, and who's still a great friend of mine, I talk to Marty Croft all the time. They're just great guys. They're, you know, they're legends, and I'm honored to be part of their life. But Sid said he contacted Gene Roddenberry to ask him if he'd be our head writer, because it was Star Trek had just finished at Paramount the 3 years, and I think they were sharing a lot at the time, a soundstage. And Gene said, I can't do it, but I've got this writer named David Gerald. You've got to meet him. And that's who they hired.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is amazing. And I wanted to share, I was a little bit older than Michelle. And I, again, the story was was what I showed up for, because I hoped every time that you were going to get out. I mean, I guess in essence, there wouldn't have been a show anymore. But at the same time, it was just like, this is the week. This is when they're going to get out. I just wanted you guys to get out. And that's kind of, you know, why I showed up. And we recently rewatched the pilot. And I wrote down two lines that were in the pilot that I thought were pretty profound. And one was when you first meet Chaka, right? And you're telling your dad about him, and Holly says, can we keep him? And your dad says, people don't own other people. Ooh, and I was like, mic drop. That was
we thought that too. My husband and I were watching it, Carolyn. We were like, mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's a next level thing, especially 1974.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's funny because at that moment I was watching it with my 20-year-old son, which was, that's a trip right there. And he goes, he's not a dog. Like, he was really upset. So he probably was tuning into Rick. Like, yeah, you can't own other people. He's a Bakuni.
Then later on, when I guess maybe you were talking about Chaka being your friend, and it says, your dad says again, it takes a lot of trust to make a friend. And I thought, for the kids listening back then, like, that's another powerful line, you know?
So and we those trusted were, Rick.
Yes. Right?
Like, he was an authority figure.
Well, exactly. He was like our dad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That was so true.
And Kathy's written a book called Run, Holly, Run, and she had quite a dramatic life. And Spencer Milligan, who played our dad, is still to this day like a dad to her. And we are all very close friends. I talk to Spencer all the time. I'll call Spencer and go, I go, hey, Papa. He goes, hey, Will, how you doing? You know? And I go, Papa, can you hear me? And he's like, well, he has a great sense of humor. And Phil Paley, who played Chaka, the four of us are truly a family. And
yeah.
I've always said the Crofts didn't just cast my TV family, but they cast my real life family too.
Oh.
That is amazing. Okay, I'm covered in goosebumps for like the last
2.5 years.
Yeah.
50 years ago.
That's yeah.
50 years. And we're just, I mean, telling you, we are so close, all of us, and it breaks all sorts of barriers. And just, I don't know, I thank the Crofts over and over for my family.
We love to hear that so much, and I know our listeners will love to know that. But Wesley, can we go back a little bit, and can you kind of tell us how this all came to be for you? Like, what did you think of that script when you first read it? And we were wondering, like, did you think, oh, this is, you know, like you've said, it's so well written, but did you think of this as high drama, or did you see it kind of as the campiness that makes Land of the Lost so beloved today? Because I'll tell you what, back in 1974, all of us watching it, we saw it as high drama. We were fraught with tension every week. We were scared silly of the T-Rex. We were scared silly of the Sleestaks. Many of us still are. Kristen's husband. Yeah. But like, you know, now we all watch it. And I think one reason it has become this kind of cult classic is because we appreciate and we applaud the campiness of the kind of primitive sets. And, you know, that little raft in the intro that is like, wah! You know, goes down the waterfall.
It looks like a tiny bowl. Remember the commercials with the blue water?
Yeah. But take us back, because like I just said, and we've talked about a little, we talked a little bit about earlier, as viewers in 1974, whether we were 5 or whether we were 8 or 9, we saw it as very realistic and very high drama and very tension filled. As the actor who was in it, how did you see it in 1974 when it first came to be for you?
It was amazing. I was on Days of Our Lives at the time playing Mike Horton, which I did for about a decade. And when I got the script, because remember, this was a drama on Saturday morning. We were, you know, we had the Flintstones and all the cartoons and all the silliness and even Puffin stuff and Lidsville from the Crofts. Everything was silly. It was kids. And then suddenly you have a drama. I mean, there's one episode where a Sleestak pretends he's our mother and morphs into our mother to try to kill us. I mean, this is kids on Saturday morning. And I think that's because it never talked down. I mean, again, David Gerald said, I'm writing a show, you know, a sci-fi show that just happens to air on Saturday morning. And Land of the Lost, The budget was so thin because it's Saturday morning. We filmed 2 episodes a week, so 2.5 days to film each episode, which was unheard of. I mean, it's just never been done. I don't think ever again. Mm-hmm. And so we had this amazing two sound stages. They were huge. One of them was like our lagoon and with all the jungle. The other was the interior of our cave. And then the blue screen, which is now green screen. And every celebrity you can imagine would come visit our set, from Elton John to Charo to Stallone to there was one point where Charo was chasing Chaka around the jungle going, "Coochie, coochie, 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 coochie."
But it was right there.
It was an event. I mean, people wanted to come to our set because they'd never seen anything like it before.
That's so funny.
I love, these are the things we love to know.
Charo. Just say the name Charo and everybody goes back in time.
And I've got to tell you, we did a show, Kathy and Phil and I did a show recently in Hollywood, and Charo was sitting across from us. And I'll tell you, she is still as beautiful, and she looks exactly like she did from the 1970s.
That's,
you know, and just as perky and fun as you can imagine.
And nobody really knows how old she is. It's a mystery.
No.
No, I don't.
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods can make it a little less stressful with their incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, including yourself. You guys, I just ordered what looks to be one of the funnest games I might have ever seen. It's called Blabby, and you get to make up words. Like, I can make Manilow a verb in this game, and you know how much I love my wordplay. And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses, many located right here in the U.S. And with every purchase that you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. We have no doubt that you'll find the perfect gift for everybody on your list. And right now, you can get 15% off your next gift by going to uncommongoods.com/PCPS. That's uncommongoods.com/PCPS for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Are you feeling overwhelmed by all of those hormonal changes Gen X women are going through? Just because those changes are from natural processes doesn't mean we have to suffer through them. And that's why Kristen, Michelle, and I love Hormone Harmony. It's a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. The three of us have noticed improved sleep quality, gut health, and even our moods have improved. The science-backed herbal extracts in Hormone Harmony, called adaptogens, help the body adapt to all those hormonal changes that cause those life-disrupting symptoms, like hot flashes and night sweats, bloating and gas. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromises when it comes to quality, and it shows. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds, and there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony, with one of the biggest benefits mentioned being, I feel like myself again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today.
Okay, I have a very important question for you. This is a vital question for us and for our listeners. We need you to settle something for us. So I mentioned in the little intro there about I said something about our podcast intro, the one we say every single week. We've said it over 100 times. And what we say as we introduce our podcast is, we believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition. We say it every single week. And we have gotten some hate mail from people saying you're doing it wrong because Marshall was their last name. Rick was the dad. But I've been singing Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition. And who's right? Who's right?
Oh, gosh. Well, you're both right. Yes, Marshall is our last name, and it was wrong. I mean, so it should have been Rick Marshall, Will, and Holly. But
Rick Marshall, Will, and Holly. Oh,
and you know, I sang the song. I sang the song in the opening credits.
You did?
Yeah. And the closing credits. Yeah.
That's a
I was recording back
song.
From Motown at the time. And so they said, Wesley, come sing it. So it was Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition met the greatest earthquake ever known. High on the rapids, it struck their tiny raft. Plunging down 1,000 feet below to the land of the lost, to the land of the lost. And then Bumpy goes, roar.
So, everybody's synapses are firing right now.
We are. I can't even tell you right now. There's goosebumps
this is a nipple lightning
on my goosebumps.
Yes, let's just say
Wesley,
it. Let's just tell it for what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And we're right. We just found out we're right.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, it should have been Rick Marshall, Will, and Ollie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they were, you know, listen, their budget, I don't know how fast they wrote that song, but
yeah. But that explains it because when we get an email or a DM that says, hey, we love your podcast, but just wanted, you know, every week you say, you know, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition, because basically we're saying what our podcast represents. The whole reason we started this is because we want to preserve all of these Gen X pop culture nuggets, right? We don't want them to disappear like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition because you disappeared. And when people say that, we go back to the lyrics. We Google the lyrics again because we're like, are we wrong? And we're like, no. And we say, what could they say? Rick, Will, and Holly. But the way you just did it, Wesley, actually works. Rick Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition. And the greatest. Yeah. Yeah, it works. It works.
Earthquake all right. ever known. High so, on the rapids. Instruct their tiny raft. Yeah.
So listeners, we got it from the actual singer's mouth.
That is yeah, and not just right. somebody close to it, but right. the actual singer of the words.
Right.
You know, he knows what he's saying.
And it's amazing how that song has lived in pop culture. There's an episode of Family Guy. Where Peter actually auditions for Lois for a part in a community theater, and he sings the theme song to Land of the Lost as his audition.
I've never seen that. That's brilliant.
Jack Black has a band called Tenacious D.
That's
and
right.
you should he rocks out the theme song to Land of the Lost and closing song, which I also sang, which closed the show every week. And it's amazing how many different cover bands have performed the opening and closing song of Land of the Lost.
Michelle,
and the closing song is the best.
Yeah.
Yes,
can you give us a little bit of that, Wesley?
Like a jam.
I want Wesley to give us a little bit of the closing.
Sure. When I look all around, I can't believe the things I've found. Now I need to find my way. I'm lost. Find me living in the land of the lost, living in the land of the lost. Sid and Mark Croft.
That was like the best day of my life.
Do all of it. Oh, my God. Okay.
Oh, that was
Can
so
we
good.
Please clip that audio and use somehow in one of our promos?
Yeah.
Wesley, will you give us
permission? And Michelle, we need to put that Tenacious D in the newsletter. That needs
okay.
to be on the
list. Oh my God, you've got to see. It's great. And you know, they did Bubble Boy for Disney with Jake Gyllenhaal. It's a fabulous movie. And he pretends he's me. And he's living in a bubble. And he sings, he rocks out at the opening of the show. He's playing his guitar. And he sings the closing theme song to Land of the Lost. So
it
continues. It has a life of its own. And when I went on the set with Will Ferrell when he was doing the movie at Universal, Will came running. I never met Will before, but he was a huge fan of Land of the Lost. And he actually played a character in another movie called, and his character's name was Marshall Will and Holly. And his last name was Will and Holly. And so I go on the set of Universal. I'm with Marty Croft and he breaks character and he runs over to me and he goes, Wesley, I sang the theme song yesterday in the movie because he knew that I sang the original one. And he was just, you know, he even though the movie, you know, didn't do what it was supposed to do, his heart was in it because he loved that show.
That's good to know.
Yeah. And I think it's such a cultural touchstone for us. I mean, it's such a, you know, a part that we can all relate to, having grown up at that time. It's like you can go up to somebody your age and say, Marshall, Will, and Holly, and they'll take off and do the rest of the line. So
and now I know that Will Ferrell was one of those people.
That's right. You know what it is? Yeah. Any reference to Land of the Lost, just you say the word Sleestak or something, Carolyn, like you're just saying, it's one of those, you know how right now the big hashtag is, if you know, you know. You know, like if YK, YK, right? If you know, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like any reference to Land of the Lost is like that for our generation and for certainly the younger boomers, right? Because a lot of them were, you know, like 11, 12 years old in 1974. But like, it's so great. I mean, yeah. So like if Will Ferrell, you said his name was Marshall, Will and Holly. It's Will one of those, Holly. If you know, you know, right? If you don't, you don't.
That's right.
Can I ask you?
Marty Cross said that when the Sleestak, I think, appeared in the third episode of Land of the Lost, and the ratings for Land of the Lost went through the roof. They became NBC's number one show, not Saturday morning show. Number one show for that time. And, you know, the Sleestak to this day, like, and if you're a basketball fan, I don't know if you guys are basketball fans.
Oh, yeah, we know Bill Laimbeer was one of them, and, yep.
You're right. Bill Laimbeer, the Detroit Pistons, the bad boy of basketball.
Oh, the mean, mean man.
And Kathy and I, he was coaching the Aces, the women's basketball team in Las Vegas, and Kathy and I were at the Star Trek convention because we're the only other show other than Star Trek that's allowed at the conventions because of our connection.
Wow.
And so we go and surprise Bill Laimbeer. We haven't seen him in like 45 years or whatever. And we have Sleestak heads and we walk in. He didn't know we were coming. And all the ladies in the basketball team had 8x10s of a Sleestak. And as soon as he walked in, they held it up over their face. So he's looking around and all of his players have a Sleestak 8x10. He's looking around and Kathy and I walk in with the Sleestak head and he's like, I mean, you have to understand, he's 7 feet tall. And I'm, you know, and I look like a total midget next to him. And we took photographs and we, you know, we gave him some gifts and all sorts of stuff. But after it was all over, the head of the league came up to me and said, Wesley, I've known Bill since he was a college player. Because we used college basketball players in Land of the Lost. And that's how he got the job when he was in college. He says, I've known all those years. And he says, I have never seen that man smile as much as he did
that's
today.
Awesome.
And he just, you know, it was fabulous.
Can I ask you?
Did his job well.
He did.
This was on my coffee table right here. It's a Dynamite magazine. It's got the Sleestaks on the cover. And this was sitting on my coffee table. And my husband walked in and he goes, ah! Like, he's 54 years old. And he was like, ah!
Well, I have to ask you, Wesley, were you and Kathy and Philip, were you afraid of the Sleestaks? Or were they just guys walking around like in sweats with a Sleestak head, you know, eating a Pop-Tart and dribbling a basketball on set?
If you go online, there's some great photos of the Sleestak with their costumes pulled down.
Okay.
And so you can see their faces and stuff like that. And they were, you know, they were huge guys. But no, I mean, you know, they became friends. I mean, they were there for us. And these costumes, which were done by Mike Westmore, who did all the monsters for Star Trek. So Mike Westmore created the Sleestak, and they were wetsuits, extra large wetsuits with scales on them, and the head. So it did not breathe at all. There was no air, you know. But this is the 70s. There were no little fans built in to cool everybody off. So they could only stand there for maybe 3 or 4 minutes because then they'd pull these heads off, the Sleestak heads, and they'd be pouring sweat. I mean, these guys, it was gruesome for what these guys went through. So we got to know them, you know, sitting in director's chairs, you know, with the Sleestak costume pulled down. So yeah, we weren't terrified of them, but
that's acting, right? That's acting. Yeah. Acting.
Exactly. But when we, but every time somebody hears,
No.
I have people that go to post-traumatic stress at the conventions.
That's horrible.
Right.
I can't do that with my husband. He'll die.
Okay, our listeners have some questions for you. They let us know what they wanted to know. So, Debbie wanted to know if you ever got tired of wearing the same outfit for every episode because, you know, you got stuck in the Land of the Lost when you were out there on the waterfall on your raft. You didn't have any of your clothes. So Debbie says she was always curious if, like, in costuming, if you had a whole rack of identical shirts.
I did have two costumes because in the first season I had a blue shirt on.
Blue shirt, right?
Yeah.
And we used chroma key blue. It wasn't green back then. So we'd be on the giant chroma key set, which was half of a soundstage painted blue. And the chroma key shirt would suddenly disappear because it was the same color as the chroma key. So they made me change in the latter part of the show, in the last 2 years, into a khaki shirt. And Kathy had blue cords, I think, at the time. And they made her change to maroon because every once in a while they'd kind of pixel out a bit.
Okay, and there are some super fans out there who allege that you got some new clothes somehow in the next season. They're like, where did the new clothes come from? Like, they want the mystery to be solved. Like the dinosaur.
Well, part of it was because of the chroma key. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But Kathy, you know, Kathy grew, you know, she's taller than me now. So, you know, by the third season, you know, I was having to like come on tiptoes and her costumes were getting a little tight. So.
Well, and in real life, you know, that's
you see
what
in the third season, she rolls up her sleeves a lot in the third season because they didn't fit anymore.
Oh, like Rick and Will, never mind. I was going to say they couldn't just have made her a podcast.
They couldn't have made her a new shirt or something.
Right. Never mind.
But the budget was so small. You already shared.
Well, you would think that it's Land of the Lost. At least a seamstress could fly in. I mean, they could have done that.
But she was also growing in Land of the Lost, so we would expect if that was her same shirt.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's right. You were there that whole time.
Yeah. Well, we have a listener, Amy, and she wants to know if Chaka was a child in a monkey suit, which I'm supposing, Amy, do you mean like as opposed to a real Pakuni, I guess? I don't know. I think we know it was Philip Paley who played Chaka. So I want to ask you this, and I guess you'll have to answer for Philip, but like that had to have been intense to get into that makeup and costume every episode.
Well, I think what she's saying was because the Crofts use a lot of little people.
And
Phil was an actual child. He was 10 years old. Mm-hmm. He was the youngest black belt in karate in the United States at the time. His teacher was Chuck Norris. There's a clip of Phil is like 4 foot something, tiny, and when he's a kid. And he's on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and Chuck Norris. And there's a clip where Phil flips Johnny Carson over on his back doing karate. And it is hysterical. It comes up every once in a while. And if you can catch it, you'll laugh your tail off. But Phil, it took him about 2 hours when we first started Land of the Lost to put the makeup on, put the prosthetics on, the headpiece, the teeth, all the whole thing. And the suit was, I think they actually went... Because remember, the budgets were really low, especially the first seasons. I think they went to Planet of the Apes and pulled his suit from one of their wardrobe. And so it was itchy and scratchy. And it was uncomfortable. But he was amazing because you have to remember that the Pakuni language was real. That it was he wasn't just doing, you know, making it up as, you know, go blah, 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 blah.
Oh, I didn't know
that. It was actually written. It was created by a linguist at UCLA, and she took I think 8 languages and got different pronunciations and verb conjugations and things. But there's a dictionary, the Pakuni dictionary. So he had every word was specific, like Oganza Bisasa was big magic, Wira Ari Marisha, you know, for Will and Holly and Marshall and. There's a couple of episodes where it mostly features Phil and he's talking Pakuni almost the whole half hour. And, you know, this is a 10 year old boy and learning this. He was extraordinary.
I am amazed. And I loved the way Chaka talked. I loved that.
And it goes back to what you said at the beginning. This speaks to the level of, I guess, just kind of intelligence and the level of thought that was put into this show from the very beginning. From, you know, you said they're not just hiring, you know, someone who, let's write this science fiction show. They're going and they're getting Star Trek writers. And now they're not just going to make up a silly language. They're getting an actual linguist to develop a language to give this, just to put this show on a different level. So we can look back at it now.
And a child is learning it.
Right. And we can look back at it now, like I said earlier, and just we love the campiness of it now, but we respect it so much because of all of these things that went, all of this thought that actually did go into it. You know, small budget be damned, right? We're going to still make this a show that is a quality show.
I think the Croft said their budget was $25,000 or $50,000 an episode.
Oh, wow.
And that is peanuts. And that's for everything, for salaries and props and the whole thing.
Oh, my gosh.
Unbelievable. That is unbelievable.
I'm known on our podcast to go down some rabbit holes and uncover things that maybe not everyone knew. And I found a few that I just wanted to share and ask you a little bit about. One is, I discovered that you almost replaced David Cassidy in The Partridge Family. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Again, you know, we all knew each other because we'd go to events together. But David had decided to leave the show, The Partridge Family. He got tired of it. And so he told the producers he was leaving, and ABC panicked because the show was a hit. So they created a scenario where they were looking for somebody to play his next door neighbor, become his best friend, and with a single dad. And David was going to go off to college, and the boy was then going to get married, and the boy was going to become the lead singer of the Partridge Family. And I auditioned for ABC. I went to Bobby Sherman. I went to his house, Bobby. I recorded a song for ABC, and I had to lip sync it for ABC, and I got the part. And then David goes, they found out I was doing it, goes, no, I'm not leaving. And so they threw that whole scenario out because he decided to stay. And of course, they were happy he stayed. And that it never happened.
Oh, that had to have been a pretty big disappointment, though.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I was supposed to be Gopher in the Love Boat, and ABC and NBC agreed I could do, because I was on Days of Our Lives, and they agreed I could do this because there were different networks, and they agreed I could do it. And then the last minute, right before we were supposed to leave for the second pilot, NBC pulled out and said, nah, we're not going to let him do it. Listen, I signed a contract to host The Tonight Show in Australia. And with Channel 9 Australia. And then I had to meet with the government in Australia, in Melbourne. And they go, oh, no, we're not going to let an American host a show. And so I took my shrimp off the Barbie. But,
my gosh. Well, I've got to say, though, because of my research, I'm really glad that you lost all of those opportunities, because I'm afraid that you wouldn't have been able to do something that perhaps impacted my life even more than Land of the Lost. And that was that you are co-creator of Dragon Tales. And for all the Gen X moms and dads out there, Dragon Tales saved our lives. Let me just say, my children loved that show. And in Roanoke, Virginia, where we lived, it came on right at that arsenic hour, right when things were going crazy and I needed to fix dinner and they were cranky. They lived for that show, and it gave me peace. You gave me sanity when I was a young mother.
And I have to thank you because we've been doing this podcast now for a little over 2 years, and we've had some pretty big moments. And it wasn't really until a couple weeks ago when Carolyn told us that you created Dragon Tales. And I just happened to mention it to my 27-year-old daughter and my 21-year-old daughter. And I don't think I've ever been higher in their eyes in my entire life, no matter anything I've ever done as a mother, as a writer, as a podcaster, than when they knew I was going to be speaking to the person who was responsible for Dragon Tales, which, as Carolyn just said, with her children as well, one of the shows they will never, never forget. So thank you for that.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey? Because that's a little bit different than all the other things we've been sharing.
Sure. I had been producing and writing a totally hidden video for Fox, which was a hidden camera show back in the day. And I would cast myself as the waiter or whatever in the bits. But the executive producer moved over to Sony Pictures, and the government was offering this huge grant, $60 million for a new kid show for PBS. And Sesame Street wanted it, the Muppets wanted it, everything. But I'd written a book called The Red Wings of Christmas, which Disney had bought as an animated feature. And I wrote the screenplay and the songs for Disney. And Jim Cohen, he called me and said, Wesley, I've got these dragon drawings. And can you come on over and maybe, because Red Wings of Christmas was his son's favorite book. And so I went over and they had done some work, and I put it all together in 3 days. And then they needed a companion piece, and I wrote another show that was a companion piece. And anyway, it sold in a week. And the show became, you know, what it was. And it was huge. I mean, it was all over the world, and live shows, and, you know, stuffed plush toys all over the place.
Oh, yeah. And they just instantly break out into the theme song. And yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dragon Tales, Dragon Tales. It's almost time for Dragon Tales. Come along, take my hand. Let's all go to Dragon Land.
Did you see that?
That now just makes my heart so
I did
heavy.
Not. I did not write that or sing that. But there were three creators on the show, and I was one of them. Ron Rudiker was one of the guys. He was the original guy that did the dragon drawings. They didn't look anything like the show, Dragon Tales, but they were very sophisticated. He was from Laguna Beach. He was an educator, and he used to sell these dragon drawings, which were very funny, at the Sawdust Art Festival every year. And that's how this all started, this whole journey with Dragon Tales.
Oh, well, I am glad it started.
And it's wonderful, kids. I get a lot of kids on the spectrum, at the conventions that come up to me, and, because, you know, these conventions are amazing on many, many, many levels, besides meeting fans and, you know, nostalgia. But it's a great safe place for kids on the spectrum. And I cannot tell you how many times they'll come up and they can sing every song from Dragon Tales. And we will sing and laugh and giggle and hug. And it's amazing how you could do something and don't know the ripple effect. What's the long term effect and the longevity of something you do that you think is fleeting and it's not.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That should be the end of the episode right now. That was beautiful. Except I have more questions.
Yeah.
So I can't stop. I do have some questions about the pilot episode, because we all watched this last night, and you know, we all say that we loved Land of the Lost, but it wasn't until I flipped it on and I started watching it. And Michelle, you said that your husband had the same reaction. Yes, I loved Land of the Lost, but I loved Land of the Lost. Like, I'm watching it and I have to say it out loud. Like, I loved Land of the Lost. I loved it so much. Okay, so we have some questions, because now we're watching it as adults. We're like, hey, wait a minute. Hey. Okay, so the first question I have for you is, why was your shirt unbuttoned down to your navel? Like, why did nobody in the 70s button their shirt?
Why would they?
Yeah, if you look, if you're a teen idol.
At my age now, I have to button the top button to hide everything.
Yeah, and a turtle for me.
Exactly.
You did look like
but
a teen
idol. But
it was
the style.
Yeah.
It struck me. First of all, it was sexy. Let's just say it. And I wondered if you waxed your chest. I mean, that was smooth. That was really smooth.
Hey. I did not. No, I'm natural.
You're natural.
Yes, you are allowed to plead.
It was such a 70s moment.
Allowed to plead the fifth on any of Kristen's questions.
Sure you did.
No, it's okay. And you know, I ended up doing like a Chip and Dale's calendar and stuff like that.
You
so
did.
Back in the day.
Let's find it.
Yes, I'm the month of May. Thank you very much.
And the merry, merry month of May.
And I got to tell you, Chris Atkins is one of the nicest guys. Both Greg Evigan and Chris are amazing. I had not really spent any time with Chris until we did a show together in Connecticut about a year and a half ago. And, you know, I was a huge fan of his. And we had more fun. The two of us, I don't know what happened, but it clicked. And we were like little school kids. And I it was one of the greatest weekends. And Kathy, who played Holly, goes, oh, you're going over to Chris's table again, aren't you? Yes, I am. Okay.
This is good to know. We all had a crush on Chris Atkins. Let's just say
he was amazing. And then, of course, Greg Evigan, who was just, you know, extraordinarily talented and a great musician. Yeah. So,
well, hey, this is great to know for us for March, because you're all three going to be there. And so are we. So, you know, we're going to get to witness this friendship in real life.
Michelle, I'm imagining this just flashed through my head. We have the event. It's all fun. And then we say, hey, who wants to go out and have some tacos after or whatever? And
oh,
then
me,
Chris and Greg and Wesley and the three of us, we all go and, you know, have some tacos and enjoy some time together as pals.
You know, one of the things about the shows that we do and things like that is I get to meet my heroes.
Oh,
you know, it's not just sort of standing behind the table and being from Dragon Tales or Land of the Lost or Days of Our Lives or whatever. But I get to sit next to Lou Gossett Jr., Charo, Lou Ferrigno, all these different people that I grew up. And I'm like sitting there and going, I can't believe that I am sitting next to this person who I've watched my entire life, because I'm a fan too. And when I'm going to a show, I look at the guest list and go, oh my God, this person, I get to meet this person. You know, it's amazing. So there's the two sides to these shows, you know, and one of the fun, like with Chris and being able to spend time William Catt, I'll tell you, met William Catt from America's Greatest Heroes. And I mean, again, these guys are so much fun to be with. So.
I love that. It goes back to you saying, you know, the teen idols would come over. We'd all get together, the teen idols. And I just love that.
You call yourself the teen idols?
Yeah. I just love we all love to know that. It's not just the three of us. Our listeners love to know that too. Just like that you're so close with your castmates of Land of the Lost, and that you can say these are honestly good people. That's huge for us as fans.
All the fans want to know that.
Yeah.
All the fans fantasize about how their favorite stars are friends in real life, right? That's our fantasy. And apparently you're making it come true. That's great. Mm-hmm. Okay, but my questions are really important. These are
questions.
And I have to do them. Okay, so in the credits of the pilot episode, why do the credits say Wesley as Will Marshall? Where was your last name?
Yes, I have that question.
Oh, well, the budget was so small they couldn't afford the last four letters for the show. The cross were so cheap, and it just, you know, EURE was just, you know, they were going to cost them a lot, like $37, and it was, you know, they couldn't do it. So.
Good answer.
Okay, it was the stupidest thing in the world. Okay, let's
this
just deal with it. I was recording for Motown at the time with a band, because you never heard of us, so it didn't work. But Michael Lloyd was one of the guys. Michael Lloyd ended up being the guy that produced the theme song to Land of the Lost, became one of the biggest record producers in the industry to this day. But Michael was one of, there were four boys. It was a boy group. And so my manager at the time goes, oh, it's the 70s. Wesley. Huh? Just Wesley.
You're Randy. And, Cher. Charo. Wesley.
Thank you. You know, and so if you probably noticed by the second season, it was Wesley Ewer. It was an interesting choice that was... Oh, well, it's kind of fun to talk about now, but it was kind of stupid.
It's fabulous is what it is. It's absolutely fabulous. Yeah. That's great.
Okay, truth is, I like it.
How did you not? I mean, you were in good company. Like I said, there's Cher, there's Charo. You know, later on, there was just Prince. Mm-hmm. There was just Madonna.
Yeah.
I used to go to Cher's. Cher used to have garage sales.
Oh, jeez. What?
And it was invitation only.
Stop it.
And you'd go to, I went to three of them. And Cher, I'd go up to Cher's house. And I'd use a big gate. And I'd push the button. And Cher would go, yeah. I go, Cher, it's Wesley. She goes, come in. So the gate would open up. And you drive in. And in her garage, she had all these Bob Mackie gowns and furniture and jewelry that, because she was like a shopaholic.
Oh, my gosh.
And we would go. I'd take my mother, because my mother could wear, they were the same size, because Cher's really petite. And my mother was petite. And And we would buy, you know, we bought two giant green wingback chairs because he was redecorating. And those were in my mother's house for years. And the first time we went to her garage sale, the first one that I went to, somebody bought one of those squash blossoms, which back in the 70s, there were those big silver and turquoise necklaces, sort of Indian motif. And they bought it for $75. Now this is the 70s. And they sold it for $2,000 the next week. So the next one I went to, I ran with my mother. And we went right to the jewelry, grabbed the jewelry. But I remember my best moment with Cher was she's standing in the garage and there's something for like $20. And I go, Cher, I'll give you 15. She goes, it's Mach 20. Okay, I'll pay 20.
She was not about the haggling,
not garage
Wesley.
Sale prices.
Yeah.
50 cents.
She wasn't. She wouldn't haggle with me.
That's so funny.
Oh my God.
Okay, here's my last pilot question. And it has to do with preparation for the show. So please be honest. Did you have to practice like your scared faces in the mirror before your first day of work? Like,
oh, no.
There's so many scared places.
You know, well, first of all, I mean, I started doing Shakespeare in New York and Stratford and stuff like that. But I was on days and stuff, but in fact, there was one scene that Kathy and I did. We actually saw where we see our mother and we start to cry and stuff. And they stopped tape. And Bob Lally, I think it was Bob Lally, the director, he came out and said, look, guys, this is too real. He said, remember, this is Saturday morning. You got to pull it back a little bit because it'll scare the kids too much. And so he said, it's just too real. And so Kathy and I had to pull it back. And Kathy, my gosh. Episode, if you ever watched the episode, the opening of the third season where we've lost our dad, I just saw it recently. I was crying like a baby. I never saw the episode before. Because remember, back in the 70s, if you missed it, you missed it. You didn't get to see it. You know, because there was no recording anything or repeats. Unless you were, you know, lucky enough to catch that one day that it repeated. But the performance of her, you forget how amazing these child stars were. And there's a reason they're famous. And, you know, we're around a lot of child stars, from Johnny Whitaker to Butch Patrick to all these wonderful kids. And we forget sometimes what amazing actors and actresses mm-hmm. they were.
Wow.
So does that mean that when you're running away from the dinosaur, can you see the dinosaur? Or are you having to conjure something in your mind?
No. Well, it was the largest blue screen, which again is now green screen, but it was the whole wall of a soundstage was blue. The floor was blue and whatever was blue disappeared. So the dinosaurs were on film and we were videotape. And the first episode didn't work because they had never been able. It's the first time in history in Hollywood. They had melded live film and videotape at the same time. So it didn't work the first episode. So they called the Disney people in and everybody worked on it. And the next week they were able to fix it. But what they do is Kathy and I or Spencer Milligan, who played Marshall, our dad,
Marshall.
We would be on the blue screen and they would say, look at that light up there. And that's going to be Grumpy's head. Run to the right.
Wow.
You know, and that's it. So we just look up there. So we're all focusing on the same light. So it looks like we're looking at Grumpy. And then they would shrink us down. So we could see in the monitor, they'd have the dinosaurs on film and they would just shrink our bodies down and be proportionate to the dinosaurs. And it was all done live.
Wow.
And that must have been so exciting for you. How old were you when you were and when you started doing this?
Well, I was 22 because I was playing 16, but I'd been on the soaps and stuff like that. And I remember I was in New York. I'd actually been flown to New York. I was going to star in Candide on Broadway, David Merrick. And I got a call that I got Land of the Lost. And I go, I don't know if I want to play 16. You know, I mean, I'm 22 and I'm on the soap. And anyway, one of the greatest decisions of my life is to say
yes. Well, it's impacted. I mean, look at family. To this day, it still changed, like you said, at these, all of these events. And we just love that you and Kathy and Philip show up with the yellow raft. And I think, you know, this conversation with you, Wesley, we feel, at least the three of us feel, has been a long time coming because you're so awesome. Listeners, Wesley has just the most fun Instagram page because he posts all these photos when they go to these fan events and you bring your yellow raft. And I've said many times to you, it's our bucket list to get on that raft. And you always reply to us and we get so excited. We share it in our little chat with each other. Wesley liked it. That means he wants us to be on the yellow raft. But we're hoping one day we're going to be on that yellow raft and we all get to do the face that they all like bounce well, and then they make the face where they go, wah!
Well, it was Kathy's idea, and we've done it for about 10 years, and that was a good idea 10 years ago. Now that I've gotten older, I need to order a craft to get up and down. But it, you know, we bring the yellow raft, we put yellow life jackets on, yellow oars, and a lot of performers, you go to these shows, you buy an autograph and get a photo. We thought, no, let's create an experience. And we put everybody in the raft on the floor. We get in, we pretend we're going for the waterfall. Everybody's screaming and yelling. And we have had, and plus every celebrity that you can imagine begs us to get a photo. Melissa Gilbert was in the raft. Mindy Cohen was in the raft. John Schneider, Lonnie Anderson, Sam Jones, all these people come running and say, we want a picture. We want a picture
of the
raft.
It's the most famous raft in TV history.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, going back to how you did say this was the best decision you made, because it's understandable that at age 22, you would say, I don't know if I want to play 16, because at 22, you think you're all that, you know, but it's still to this day impacting people. But that's also thanks to you guys, because you're still going out and connecting with everybody. And that means the world to all of the fans, and to us and to our listeners. So yeah, we just have to thank you again for that.
Thank you.
We really, appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
So appreciate this has been so fun. Thank you so much for meeting with us.
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. We're so excited.
Hey, I cut you guys off.
Thank you guys. Thanks for having me.
No, that's
it.
But I do want to ask, you know, we're so excited to meet you in person on March 12th. We will be there with bells on. And are you bringing the raft? Probably not, right? To the March 12th event, do you think? Because it's a different type
of
event.
I'm coming from my house in Mexico. I live in Mexico 6 months out of the year in Puerto Vallarta. Oh, nice. And so I'll be just flying in for the day to LA. And then I'm not bringing the raft this
wouldn't,
time.
You wouldn't object then if we brought our own raft, I'm hearing, is what I'm hearing, right?
Oh my gosh, no. Oh my, go for it. Are you crazy? Oh, bring it. We'll blow it up and then we'll get in. Absolutely.
Oh, we're so excited to chat with you and with your friends, Chris and Greg. We're excited to chat with them and Jimmy and Christy.
Absolutely. We will see you on March 12th.
Perfect. I look forward to it. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Bye, guys. Take care.
When I look all around, I can't believe the things I found. Now I need to find my way. I'm lost.
Listeners, you are welcome. That was a Gen X Hollywood insider conversation of epic proportions. Land of the Lost and Charo in the same room. I mean, who knew?
And Cher.
There was an intersection of those two things. Plus Cher and her garage sales. All of that makes for a really good day for the Pop Culture Preservation Society. A very special thank you to Wesley Ewer for his generosity with us today. And thank you all for listening. Stay safe out there and watch out for those slee stacks.
And you guys, I'm going to do my darndest to find that clip of Philip Paley flipping Johnny Carson.
Oh, that would be great.
And yes, if you're lucky enough right now to already be a subscriber to our weekly reader, you will get to see a clip. Cross your fingers, I find it. And if you're not already a subscriber, just go to our website or our link in Instagram to sign up.
And also the Tenacious D clip of them doing the Land of the Lost theme. I want to see that in the weekly.
Let's put that in too. Yeah.
Yes, that will be in there too. So you don't want to miss it, peeps.
Today's episode was funded by our supporters on Patreon. But really,
she's on NPR.
I know. But really, everyone who joins our team of supporters on Patreon gets a shout out on this podcast because you are what makes all of this happen. Today, we'd like to give a big, humongous thank you to Christine, Nina, Sherry, Stacy, Donna, Kristen, Tracy, Margaret, and Joanne. Thanks so, so much for all of your support.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. To good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers. Cheers.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you. Something always happens whenever we're together.